KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. It's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
So this is another week of the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show, and we've got a full house here. We've got Molly and Ara and myself.
No, Ara is not here today.
Oh, jeez.
We all went out for the first time ever.
It was a nice dinner, yes.
It was nice. It was a breakfast for me, really. It was the first thing I ate all day. That wasn't just snacking. But it was good times. We went out to the old 24-hour diner.
I'm wondering how long I can keep up this voice before my throat explodes.
You sound like the dude from Rocky and Bullwinkle.
No!
No, it's from Star Wars.
No, I'm not trying to be either of those guys.
Yeah.
Now you have embarrassed me. I will not talk like this.
Well,
anymore.
You know, they did say that all the six Star Wars movies are going to be remade in 3D. So you have reason.
What, again?
You have to be inspired. Yeah, well, anytime there's a new technology, they will remake Star Wars. Yeah.
No, that's... You probably thought I was doing Watto.
Yes.
Yeah, Watto. Yeah.
No, Watto's dark, like, deeper. Watto's like, eh, you break, you buy.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez, that sounds kind of like
it. He's done that before.
I have not heard that before.
I was ready for it. So.
I'm very impressed.
I abuse myself from time to time.
All right, so.
I said abuse.
No, I was, and abuse. I was actually trying to do Doofenshmirtz, but.
Doofenshmirtz?
Yes.
The inventor.
Yeah.
Okay. Your favorite new cartoon character from the Disney Channel, no less.
Yes.
Phineas and Ferb?
Yeah. And by the way, I know that you, now that you mentioned this Disney Channel with disdain twice, I do have to add that that cartoon was actually repeatedly attempted to be submitted to Disney and was rejected by them for like 8 years going because it was too adult.
But now it's on.
But now the tables have turned, yes.
Okay. Well, that's fantastic. I haven't seen the full episode. I don't know what to say.
It's a lot of fun, yeah.
I know that my 8-year-old nephew enjoys watching it.
As do I.
Yeah. All right, so what are we going to talk about today? We talk about video games here.
We've got many video game topics here tonight.
I could talk about Plants vs. Zombies. I could talk about playing some Halo Reach.
I would like to hear about these plants and zombies, please.
So this is a game that everyone has been chatting about being awesome for a long time, and I've never actually tried it. To the extent, well, like... I never even looked at a screenshot to know what it was like at all. And then one day, I just, for whatever reason, in the last few weeks, I was like, I should check it out, right? So I got the demo. And,
are you the plant or the zombie?
Actually, you could be both in the Xbox Live version.
But not at the same time. Right?
You're primarily the plants, defending from zombies.
Yes, I like the plants, too.
Yeah. To be more exact, you are the homeowner using the plants.
Are there any gnomes... Garden gnomes or anything like that.
No.
In this game. Okay. Continue.
Okay, so I finally decided to take a look at it, and in short order, my wife decided this is a game we should totally buy, and I should invest all of my time into. And I thought, well, there goes your law career. So she's been playing it like mad, and then while at the library one day. Doing her best to avoid studying more. She then bought it for her iPhone because she just couldn't get enough after finishing it at home. She just continues to play it on the iPhone now, which is very similar, by the way. The iPhone and Xbox Live Arcade version are...
I've got an iTouch, and I was always considering buying Plants vs. Zombies, and then I think Angry Birds is one of them, too. There are several iPhone, iPad games that have intrigued me, but I've never wanted to actually spend the money.
Well, you should just play it on Xbox Live, but it is much less expensive on the iPhone.
So is this like a tower defense game or what?
It is. It's funny because Michaela actually asked me, what sort of game is this? And I said, I would probably call it a tower defense game.
And this is funny, right? Because...
did you know that because you've seen it before? Or because I said waves of zombies?
No, I mean, I've seen screenshots. I just assumed that it was that type of game without... really,
but it's kind of like a strategy game in that you've got sort of the preparation phase and then you've got the action phase. Like an RTS gives you that time to build up your units and then to, you know, either attack or defend or whatever.
Now, the point of the game more or less is to like plant plants to ward away zombies, right?
Yes.
Okay.
It's kind of, let me give you an example or an analogy. Let's say you were given an opportunity in some other like first person-ish game. It's set in the future where there were robots and sentinels and whatever. You place a bunch of stationary, turret guns that have different features and wait for the onslaughts to come. That's what it is. You're laying down various items.
I have to say I'm amazed that tower defense is a genre.
It's become that way on the iPhone specifically. Yeah.
Well, I always like to say that the only reason why there are genres is because enough people decided to do the same thing over and over.
Yeah. And that happened so much in the iPhone.
And tower defense is a perfect example.
Best tower defense game ever. And I'm like, there's no tower. So anyway, this game is very much like that. You just lay down, this plant that shoots one bean per second or whatever the time limit is. And then there's the more expensive one that shoots two beans. And then like if you put a flaming something in front of it, then the bean catches on fire and it does more damage to the other guys. And then there's the one that can like shoot little bubbles. This is a mushroom instead of a traditional plant, and it can shoot little bubbles that go through a screen door that one particular zombie uses as a shield, so he dies more quickly if he's being attacked by that item.
Very intriguing,
right? So there's all sorts of, there's like 49 different plants in the game. Not all of them are offensive. Some of them are defensive, or do other things like get rid of gravestones in the night. And anyway,
are there any weapons in this game that will destroy everyone who cannot make up their minds?
There are some that destroy everyone or stop everyone.
Okay, that's all right.
Okay,
maybe I will try it.
Anyway, people think it's this super awesome, incredible, addictive game.
Yeah.
And what I found most interesting is that I actually find the game more like work than like fun.
You know what's interesting is that, at least to me, right? Because I've played too many games in this lifetime. I can say this with confidence now. There's that type of game. This is exactly what I'm talking about, where there's a populace that says it's totally addictive. And then to me, it's just completely boring and insipid and grinding.
Well, there's not enough reward to make it a game.
Yeah.
Farmville.
Yeah. Like Farmville.
I've never even played Farmville.
And I haven't even either.
Farmville is you basically take plants, like say strawberries, they grow, you plant them and they grow within 8 hours and you make money off of them. So you buy them for a certain price. And then when you harvest the crops and you sell them, you obviously get a lot more money from when you sell the stuff. So basically, the point is to like grow enough plants or crops or whatever, fruits, vegetables, and then sell them so you get enough money so you can keep doing this. And you can buy the more expensive crops to plant and get more money. And then you buy barrels of hay and cows and stuff like that. And there's no point to the game besides just
more crops and money and
besides
clicking.
Planting all your crap and then waiting a certain amount of time, anywhere from like 4 hours to 4 days.
But can you customize your barn?
I don't know. I mean, I played Farmville when it first came out, and I played it for like 2-3 weeks, and then I was like, all right, this got old.
That's funny to me, because 2-3 weeks is a long time.
Yeah, you know what? I have a theory about all this, okay? Let's consider activities like Farmville, okay? These types of things where everyone just insists that they're completely addicted to them and nobody could actually come up with a good explanation of like what they're getting out of it, right?
Yeah.
So I liken these to like a certain type of crack cocaine, okay? So it's like I've already gone through the crack cocaine phase. I've used all the crack cocaine that my mind can take and before getting bored of the crack cocaine. Because eventually,
you're saying you specifically have played too many games, so
yes,
you're no longer
like this,
attracted
right,
to this?
Right. Okay. So, I mean, eventually,
you're burnt out on crack.
If you smoke enough crack cocaine, you will get tired of it, even crack cocaine, maybe take a lot longer, right?
Okay.
So I feel like I've gone through that already. So a lot of these types of plausibly addicting games are just like I have no interest in them whatsoever. And I'm wondering if there's it's like it's almost like every person, right, has like their own crack threshold.
For me, it was all about like the big selling point of Farmville 2 is like you start out with this really, really tiny peg of land where it's like you can plant maybe 6 or 7 different rows of crops of your choosing. And then as you progress and you get more neighbors and you sell more crops and all that, your land will expand and you'll gain more space in which to plant all that stuff. And then in turn, you also unlock like the more premium crops that you can plant. So it's all about just grinding away at the game to unlock better stuff.
Right.
But there's like...
But this, what's
there's,
the better
there's
stuff?
No ultimate yeah. reward.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no ultimate reward in it.
Yeah,
so.
Here's the other interesting part. Is that I have found myself, and I'm sure other people, maybe even you guys, have experienced this too.
Maybe.
Maybe. That I will... Sometimes, even as of late, I will get sucked into this crack cocaine cycle.
Like this Gaia.
That's exactly the example I
don't do strategy games.
And I found out, I realized that up to a point, right, the only reason why I was playing something or continuing to play that game was to see what new graphics I could uncover. And that was it. Once I got to the point where... I had a really good sense of like how many more graphics were left to be uncovered that I had yet to see.
So basically you were investing all of this time to just look at some bitmaps.
Well, this is what I, after much introspection, yes, that's what I realized I was actually in fact doing. Because once this got to a certain threshold where like I'd like basically decided that after a certain point, like there's like 4 sprites in the game that I haven't seen, and I've seen basically almost everything else. I don't know. Maybe there.
When you get that close, then you just want to complete it.
Well, no, but not Disgaea though. Because
you didn't play Disgaea so that you could go into a pizza.
You know, as attractive as journeying into pizza sounds, and Alon really loves that analogy.
Oh, yeah, we talked about it on the Golga cast. Too.
Yeah,
many times.
It's just something in the game. It's not that all exciting. Like I'm in the pizza. You're not really in a pizza. You know?
It's a mystic pizza.
Yeah, I'm gonna level up that pizza.
Yeah, and no, it's very attractive to level up your pizza. I've spent many years trying to level up items and stuff like that, right? But it just got to the point where it was like, okay, there's gonna be like 10 hours until I get to the next like super ultra secret boss. Then after that, there's gonna be like 40 more hours until I get to the next ultra super secret boss. After that one, and there's like 3 of them, right? And that was the only content in the game left, right?
So you just have like this one moment of clarity where you hit eject and then you crack the disc so you can't be crazy again?
Well, I didn't do that. I have done that in the past, but not time.
I want to hear a story of when you broke your game specifically so you couldn't play it anymore.
It was more like a launch, like a discus.
Okay. Like with a shotgun?
No, with my mom.
Okay, it's not skeet then.
No.
Skeet, skeet, skeet. All right, we'll be right back.
Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX, AM 1100.
It's just made out of rubber. And thank you for playing Welcome to the Conversation Without Any Context.
We were talking about Batman films.
And more specifically, Joel Schumacher's insane vision of making us view rubber Batman butts and nipples.
And more relevant is today's release of Bat-F XXX, a Batman parody. I might be getting that title wrong. This is based off of memory when Molly made me watch the trailer.
I came across it.
I can't remember how I came across it. But when I saw it, I was like, it needs to happen. There's no denying that we need to watch this.
Molly's birthday is in just 2 days, and she said she wants to spend the weekend watching that movie with the Golgatron crew.
Well, that sounds exciting.
So we're going to find out where in the valley we can get the Batman parody,
now,
porno parody.
Correct me if I'm wrong. This isn't part of Batman Canon?
No. Yeah. And what's funny, it's actually the second Batman parody. Right,
yeah.
So there's one. Just,
of course.
Just like there was a reboot.
Of course.
Just like there was a reboot in the movies. This one is the first one that came out was based on
the 60s
like
show.
The original Batman show, exactly, like the Adam West one. And this is more the modern one, like with the special effects. And
the rubber butt.
Yeah, it's this more is, like the Dark Knight version.
Yeah, because it's parody. All about, I believe the synopsis of the movie is that the Joker and Poison Ivy team up because Poison Ivy has developed some sort of, you know, pheromone thing that just makes everybody in Gotham City crazy.
I see.
And sex crazy.
How devious.
Orgies abound. And so, like, you know, Joker just takes advantage of all the mayhem that's going on, and then everybody basically has sex with each other.
He takes advantage of the
truth
just
is Molly
too much
knows about this because
on.
She was one of the authors.
I'm surprised. Yes. I'm impressed by your.
It's a Batman fan fiction.
So, are you going to make it out to the Golgatron Saturday this time? If we're going to just be watching porn all day, right? And I might make grilled cheese. It'd be porn and grilled cheese day. Right. All right. Well, I look forward to it. I also look forward to the point in the show when I get to point out University of Events and Technology's website, uat.edu, and how you can go there to learn about the programs that are available at this fine university here in the Phoenix area in Tempe, Arizona.
I think the Batman porn was a good segue into UAT.
Yeah, well, they did not provide me with any rules about you know, how I can lead into their sponsor. Mention.
So any way you want to.
It is to my choosing.
So let's talk about something video game related.
I wanted to hear the story that we left off on.
Which one?
This cliffhanger.
You are breaking this disc. Which game was it?
Yeah. Man, this was a long time ago. This was... See, one of the benefits of having played way too many games is that games don't really piss you off anymore. But I do remember a time. When I was...
Games just disappoint now, right?
Yeah.
They don't enrage.
Yeah, there was a time in my life where the games did enrage me. And there's one game that was really awesome at enraging me, and it was Umjammer Lammy.
Umjammer Lammy?
Yes.
Really?
Oh, I got so angry at that
game. That game and Parappa the Rapper are a little bit upsetting because there's nowhere where you can learn the rules of the score system.
You know what?
There's no explanation.
The internal mechanics are completely jacked up, especially in Umjammer Lammy. And there's something crazy going on behind the scenes, and it never really tells you.
Yeah. No one knows how to actually do well at that game.
Yeah.
It's but you just slam the buttons a lot, and you'll do really well.
Right. Or you
at least in Parappa.
Or you can try, and then you'll do really crappy when you try. Anyway, I got so frustrated. It was like... You know, like those situations where like there's like a baby like dying under a car,
and the mom just yesterday.
Mom becomes so frantic that she just, without even thinking, just
superhuman strength,
just lifts the car and throws it. It's kind of like that with this game. Like this, I had just such a focused, intense moment of rage trying to play this game that this was actually while I was working on a strategy guide for it, no less, way back when. Just with one motion, I opened up the PlayStation, lifted the disc out, and just flung it across the room with expert accuracy.
Nice. So what did you hit?
I don't remember.
Did it hit the wall and
shatter?
It
hit something. It definitely hit something.
Did it shatter?
That would be awesome if it shattered.
No, it didn't shatter.
Well, PlayStation disc, I suspect it would not shatter.
Yeah, but it was...
If you threw it with enough force, I think it would splinter.
I even surprised myself. Like, if I had committed an offense against someone's person, I would definitely be arguing the temporary insanity defense.
Okay. But if you were writing a strategy guide for it, that makes it even worse, because you probably didn't have easy access to a second copy. Or was this a post-release strategy guide?
No. It was pre. But this was actually when I was working for Tips and Tricks.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So you had multiple copies
at
lying around?
No, I didn't break it.
Okay.
But it was bad. I pissed some people off.
By throwing it?
Yeah. Yeah, a few people.
I don't think I've ever gotten so enraged at a game that I wanted to destroy it.
Yeah, I wanted to destroy things. And the funny thing was like at my tenure there, right, like there were some games that were just so excruciatingly painful to play. It was. You think that you will, if you have a job to write a strategy guide about a game, which is at its essence, you're getting paid to play the game extensively. You would think that you could happily accept any game, even SpongeBob in Spanish, to play for the Game Boy Advance.
Oh, dude, no, I'm not interested in doing that at all.
Yeah, it's horrible. Like, there are some games, like Croc was one of them, absolutely insane, completely jacked up 3D camera.
Why would anyone write a strategy guide for Croc?
Yeah, I did that. Castlevania 64. Oh my God, I can't even begin to tell you what kind of new pains I had discovered in my body.
Yeah, you're looking forward to playing Lords of Shadow.
No. I'm not looking forward to it. I'm curious about it. I'm very curious about it, but there's a big difference there.
All right.
On the subject of strategy guides, I just have to say that the worst strategy guide ever created
was Croc.
No, it was the strategy guide for Final Fantasy IX.
You obviously didn't see the Croc strategy guide.
No, I didn't. But okay, so back in the day, like, it was right out of when the internet was the big popular thing. And so in the Final Fantasy IX strategy guide, everything is referenced like, this is the basic idea of what you need to do in the game. For more tips and tricks, visit playonline.com.
So wait, so what publication was that?
Brady Games, I think.
Oh, so it was like a book. Right?
Yeah, it was a strategy guide. It was a physical book of a strategy guide, and then it would have like, it would say, like, this is the area you need to be in, but in order to find out exactly what you need to do in this area, visit playonline.com. So that website only stayed up for, like, a year, and then it became Final Fantasy XI's, servers.
Of course it
did.
And
now it just, I don't think it goes anywhere.
Yeah, well, maybe you can play some Final Fantasy on there.
So, like, the Final Fantasy IX strategy guide is completely, like, moot. You can't do anything with it, except it's got pretty pictures of the game.
You know, it's funny. A friend of mine actually worked on the Final Fantasy strategy guides for Brady.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, and I don't know if he made number 9 or if he did 8. I think he did 8.
What's his name?
Wes Ehrlichman.
Oh, okay. I wouldn't
He's been on the show before, but ages
She's
ages
like,
ago.
I memorized the author's name.
No,
I
have, because David Cassidy was who did most of them up until 8, and then Dan Berlew took over from 9
onward. Well, Wes wasn't necessarily credited as the lead author in 8 of them, even though he did the work on all of them.
Now, let me tell
someone
you
else that's bigger puts their name on it and edits it a little bit.
Let me tell you guys something about strategy books. Have you guys ever seen a Japanese strategy book?
Yes.
Okay, you have. Have you, Molly?
I don't believe so.
Let me tell you something. I really should just bring one in for you to look at, because the difference between Japanese strategy guides and American strategy guides are a bit like comparing, the Sears Tower to a mud hut. Okay?
Well, I can't read the Japanese one, so the American one would have to do if I were interested in getting a strategy guide.
No, that's au contraire. I'll just bring one in. Okay. You don't have to read it. They're so beautifully made. It's like a piece of art. It's like every page, every piece of structure just meticulously, lovingly crafted. There's just like dictionaries of things, and like everything's just beautifully laid out. It's like people have dedicated their lives to producing this so that you can enjoy your game. And then Brady Games, it's like, S this out in a month.
Riddled with spelling errors and grammatical.
The most American strategy guides are like, go here, go here, go here, go here. Here's 18 screenshots.
Yeah.
And it's just a travesty. That's what's wrong with the world today.
Well, here in America, we're not worried about blood type.
This is true.
True. I don't even know what my blood type is. I need to find that out.
But, like, those details are irrelevant to us. It's not about the story. It's about, you know, the winning. It's our competitive nature.
I guess. It's also about, I'm sure that American strategy guides are produced at about a tenth of the cost. That's Japanese ones.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So.
We will be back.
And I know because I did one once.
Yeah. Only one? I thought you did Croc.
No. I did a book once.
Oh.
I did about 80 magazine ones.
Gotcha. All right, we'll be right back.
Hello, it's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's number one. Woohoo!
All right, we're back. Chatterbox Video Game Radio, and as is sometimes the case. Ara has left the building, but he'll be back. Molly and myself are still here. Now, Molly, we together, you and I, not only us, but we are involved in Golgatron.com.
Yes.
Another website, sister website, Chatterbox. We do here radio show, and then we do the website over there. And we get together with those guys we've talked about on the show. In fact, earlier in this very program we did. And from time to time, someone like Rich might write an article that actually gets some attention.
Yes.
And just today, in fact, that happened. Tell me about this article that Rich wrote that has somehow gotten a lot of the people to go click on links.
All right. So basically, this guy, Michael Pachter, he hosts, I think it's a podcast. It's like a weekly podcast.
The Pack Attack.
Yeah, the Pack Attack. So he made some outlandish claim that there will not be another generation of consoles being developed. Instead, everything is going to move toward like direct download, Steam streaming type of gameplay. So he's basically saying no more consoles. It's all going to be streaming video game playing from here.
Like on live stuff.
Yeah, like on live. That was what was specifically mentioned in Rich's article.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't agree with that. Rich didn't either.
Exactly. Rich has tendencies to just write flamish articles,
mm-hmm.
ones that say, no, this person's totally wrong. The question that was actually posed to him, though, was whether or not a company that's not one of the big guys could come in there and produce a console of their own and be successful. And that's when he's like, I actually don't think anyone's going to make another console. So there won't be another generation.
Yeah.
Now, I wasn't there, and you can watch, actually, there's a link on Golgatron to the Penny Arcade, the video of him giving this talk, right?
Mm-hmm.
I admittedly have not listened to every word of it, but I think we all agree that there's going to be another console cycle, and it's silly to think that it's going to jump to this as yet unproven technology. Like, I know OnLive has demonstrated that it works, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it hasn't necessarily demonstrated an acceptance in the marketplace. so maybe if we're not allowed to sell used games anymore, which is related to something we talked about a few weeks ago.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, to be honest, I don't see how they would ever put a cap on, like, there's not going to be another generation of consoles ever again. Because, technology advances pretty quickly. So I know that we're at a pretty good stage in technology now where it's, you don't think it could get much better, but you know that they'll find ways to develop it so it'll get much better, and that's what the whole next generation of consoles will serve. You know, they'll make everything look better. But, like, I can't see that they would just be like, all right, well, this next generation is it. No more, you know, making consoles after this.
Unless there is a vast conspiracy amongst the hardware makers to not make any more consoles. But then they'd have to buy off everybody who would want to come in and produce a console.
Well, let's stop for a second and think about why what he says makes sense. All right? Why wouldn't there be more? There's all sorts of reasons.
Yeah. Well, console makers hate to have to bring out new technology.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense at all financially.
Right.
Yeah, manufacturing a console is very costly. I mean, like, wasn't both Xbox and PlayStation losing a lot of money initially when they first started manufacturing?
The typical model is you spend all your money on the hardware and you lose lots of money on your hardware and you make it back plus a ton more with the software because
mm-hmm.
your
yeah.
margins are so insane on the software.
So when you license, that's why you've got to lock down these systems too, right? Like, the people who are selling PCs aren't making money off of the games that are sold on PCs, so they need to make money on their hardware. A console, on the other hand, it doesn't matter if you make money on that because every single game someone buys for the Xbox, a full retail price, Microsoft's making like $20 or $30 off of it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just raking in cash hand over fist anytime anyone makes anything on that system. Even if it's not successful, like, they're still making money for everyone that sells.
Yeah, if the console makers had their way, then what the Pachter is saying would definitely be true. They would never, ever, ever release anything new because, every time you do that, it's huge. It's huge risk. It's huge cost.
Yeah.
It's just bad news all around.
Also, it comes out in these stages. What are traditionally 5-year cycles that may have turned into something more like 10 years lately.
Yeah.
The there's a huge investment, and then technology moves forward, like you were saying, it gets better and better, but they're stuck in the past.
Yeah.
Right now, we're stuck in 5 years ago with the Xbox and the PlayStation 3.
Yeah, I would say that the only element of this idea that I would lend credence to is maybe the idea that as time goes on, I think the console lifetime will get longer and longer and longer because
There's not much need for improvement after a certain point.
Well, even besides that, even if there was, right? I mean, it is true that the more powerful the hardware is getting, the more incremental the perceptible performance improvements are.
So I want to get back to this breakdown. So benefits to a streaming system is that you don't have the big risk of the R&D.
Yeah, but this is
the hardware manufacturing.
Like there's a big jump between just digital downloading content and
streaming. No, but hang on a second. I mean, there's benefits to both sides. So you don't have the risk of the system, but at the same time, if you don't have the console system, you're not raking in the license for everyone. If all we're doing is streaming the game, then what incentive is there for a console maker, period, or for the developer to release on that console? Like, there's no such thing as a console anymore.
Right, so it's just your little dumb terminal or whatever.
Just the PC thing. So whoever, there has to be some sort of added value in the hardware that allows what is now, you know, the Microsoft and the PlayStation and the Nintendo to lock it down so that you have to pay a licensing fee. And if there isn't that, if there isn't that big hardware behind it and that reasoning for why you're going to be paying a licensing fee, then Microsoft and PlayStation and Nintendo won't have a leg to stand on. There won't be any value in anything they do. It would just become PC only and PC only in a streaming format. So,
which is funny because PC sales, by and large, have dwindled dramatically over the past few years.
Well, yeah, but that's also partially due to piracy. Everyone pirates the games on PC instead of buying them, right?
Well, sure, but they everyone pirated 10 years ago, right? The PC game state was not as sorry as the situation as it is now.
Okay. Well, bottom line, also that so going to streaming eliminates the piracy issue.
Can't pirate, I guess.
Yeah. It eliminates the piracy. It eliminates the used game market. Like, everything is totally controlled by the person distributing this content.
Ooh, I have a wonderful theory, right? But keep going.
But what I'm saying is Microsoft and Nintendo and Sony and whoever else would want to get into the scene can't let that happen because their profits just disappear at that point. They have no reason to be if they can't control licensing with a system that's locked down. Whether digital download is fine,
right?
Download to the system, but the system is still needed.
Right.
Like Xbox Live Arcade, make it all digital instead of media-based, fine.
You know what?
But it needs to be locked.
I think that a lot of the reason why the console makers are exploring all these alternative control methods is partially because of this, I think.
Because of what?
Well, it's because of the... They need to have something about their... Let's look far into the future, right? What if, like, every console is now, like, some kind of crazy cloud computing console, right? Which means you don't actually have the hardware to process it, right? Which means what is there to differentiate between products? Well, input method is one way to differentiate between products.
Yeah. So you're saying, like, with the PlayStation Move and the Kinect?
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing... There's already reasons without having to have that particular reason why they should be exploring this space right now, but I think that and why they are, but I think that that's also another reason that.
Yeah, at some point they have to be releasing hardware that makes them special so that the developer wants to release something for them specifically.
Yeah, and Nintendo was just incredibly, incredibly astute with their strategy when they just went total low tech and they just went with a special interface with the Wii, you know? I mean, that's like.
Because they put some actual thought and some foresight into it.
Yeah, I really wonder if any of the other motion control technologies would have been developed without the Wii as a precedent.
Oh, no, definitely not.
Well, it wasn't, like you were saying, the Move, like the predecessor to the Move back when it was part of, they debuted it way back in the day on the PlayStation 2. I mean, was that even, didn't that kind of give Nintendo the idea? Like, didn't
iToy?
Yeah, like the whole, like, The blueprint for the Move, basically.
I mean, you never know what sparked the idea. I mean, we've also seen some guy in the Dreamcast days developed essentially the Wii for that like Ready to Rumble boxing thing back in Midway.
Yeah, you know what's funny is it was just up until I'm trying to decide whether I want to make like the Wii the turning point or something like DDR the turning point. But by and large, up until those two breakouts, right? Peripherals, almost regardless of what they were just trash. I mean, not in quality necessarily, but just they just didn't get
acceptance
popular.
Acceptance was low.
Yes, very low.
Yeah. Market acceptance was definitely low. And I've said that on this show before as well. That's why the Wii had to happen as a new system rather than just a controller for the GameCube.
Yeah,
they had to make it a new system so that they say everybody needs to go wait in line and get this thing and abandon the old one so that every single person has this control.
That's a really good
instead
point,
instead of
actually.
It being a segmented market.
I really wish I could observe an alternate reality where like the Wii came out as a, I don't know, like a GameCube attachment or something.
Yeah. And no, wouldn't it have done as well? You'd have a segmented market for a system that had already been basically demonstrated a failure. Nobody ever bought the GameCube, so they had to completely reinvent themselves. The Wii was completely just a marketing push. It wasn't a hardware push. Not in terms of like technology advancement. It wasn't there. But definitely, we wouldn't see the move if it weren't for the Wii. Anyway, we'll be right back.
Okay, yes, it's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. I love doing this voice so much.
And we're sponsored by the University of Advancing Technology, whose website is uat.edu.
Now, I have this, there's this beautiful quote that I want to tell everybody. We were talking about Plants and Zombies earlier.
Yes, first segment we were.
So, there's some conference, there's some panel, and the CEO of PopCap is there, and he makes this comment that did not go unnoticed by blogs, which is really nice. I'll just tell you the comment, and then I'll tell you the context afterwards. So the comment is, he said, great games are always better than great marketing. I'm paraphrasing, right? And so I just told this to Alon over the break, and Alon's like, what is that supposed to mean? Games and marketing have nothing to do with
it. And I was like, a great car is better than a great watermelon.
Yeah, and I agree with that too.
They're two very different things.
Yes, but not if your company is in existence for the sole purpose of doing marketing and collecting money, and games just happen to be the medium by which that's accomplished, which is Zynga in a nutshell.
Yeah.
And you know
the Farmville company.
The Farmville company.
Yeah, the Mafia Wars company. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what's funny? Like I've been reading a lot of like Gamma Sutra and some of the more like development oriented blogs and sites lately, and there's this huge, I don't know what it is, there's this huge, like, it's kind of like a rivalry, I guess you could call it, where there's this group of designers, and they're like, you know, people in the industry, and they're totally like embracing this whole, like, what's called social network games or social games or whatever, which is basically Farmville in a nutshell,
where you have to basically, it plays off the fact that you invite your other friends to play the game with you, and it spreads.
Yeah, and there's no question that this particular dynamic of the game is totally novel and unprecedented, and there's some value in that intrinsically, right? But at the same time, there's a lot of people who have very, very good reasons for criticizing these types of games. And a lot of those criticisms are in the department of, like, where's the gameplay? There's no gameplay, you know? And you can argue about what gameplay is or isn't, but it's definitely, it's pretty clear that if you have a game product where all you're doing is basically, like, Tamagotchi-style maintenance of stuff, and you're buying things and you're telling other people what to do and these kinds of interactions, like, that's a completely different dynamic than, say, Street Fighter 4.
Yeah.
Right? And by completely different, I mean, like, completely rudimentary. And it's the thing that I find fascinating is that there's one contingent who has, like, no respect at all for the social stuff. And then the social people, right, people who are in that camp, they are like, hey, you're just jealous because we're making all the money.
Yeah,
or some other thing, or like, hey, you're just jealous because we have, you know, in the span of a year or less, we've completely wrestled the notion of what a game is away from you, and now you feel bad. And I just find that there's a lot of this bickering that's useless, counterproductive?
Yeah, well, I think bickering is most often useless. But
well, yeah, it's kind of a tautology, right? But, I mean, what I'm saying is it's – why? I don't understand, like, why is there – I mean, it's clear what those types of games do and don't do. And so why is it wrong to criticize them for their obvious weaknesses?
Well, that's the thing. Like, I think perhaps the question is longevity, right? Like, the wool's over our eyes. We're playing these games like Farmville without realizing that they're actually not serving a function of any type for the player, I mean. And how long will it take for a big Farmville player to just be like, all right, well, okay, I'm done with this. And then not play the next one because they realize it's the same thing.
Right,
I'm just
with
throw
the
my life
setting.
Away to it. Right. Exactly. So if you present them these games that aren't really games, that are just wastes of time, that eventually they won't play anymore, and so there's a drive to make a game that's genuine so that you will play it and actually enjoy it, get something out of it, so the next one that comes around, you'll do the same. You know, I don't really play social games like Farmville and Mafia Wars and all that stuff, and I tend to make fun of... This is funny.
I kind of resent that label in the first place, but I'll get to that later. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I was going to comment on this earlier in the show as well. I don't remember why, but it's pretty rare that I even go onto Facebook. But when I do, often I see an old high school friend of mine who I haven't talked to in, like, probably at least 10 years, okay. Right? And it's like, Amy, you know, ate a brain today or whatever. There's some zombie game that you play on Facebook. It may very well be a Zynga game. And, you know, when things happen in it, you post to your Facebook. It does a status update or whatever. So right. I know all about this zombie crap that she's doing. And I'm like, don't you have a husband? Like, shouldn't you have a job? You're just doing this in the middle of the day. And I'm like, oh, wait, no. I also saw on your Facebook that you also had a baby recently. Ugh. And oh, wait, isn't motherhood supposed to be a big job?
She's eating
brains. No, you just sit around all day, eating brains and throwing brains at your friends on Facebook. So it's like, apparently being a parent is not that tough because you just sit around playing games all day. And I just want to pump out a kid now so I can sit around and play useless games all day. But then I think, okay, what game do I play? I've actually been playing more than anything else lately, Words with Friends, which I discovered on the iPhone.
What? Words?
Words.
Words.
Is that like a...
It's just Scrabble.
Yeah.
It's Scrabble. It's nothing but... It's exactly the same as Scrabble, but it's asynchronous.
Okay.
So I play, and then I wait until you move, and then it tells me on my phone, oh, it's your turn now.
Yeah.
And they also do a Words with Chess.
That's cool.
Or, I'm sorry, Chess with Friends, not Words with Chess.
I know that Justin from Golgotron, he's been playing. They have the same game for Android, except it's like Word Feud, I think it's called.
Yeah.
So it's like the variation of it. So
anyway, so I've been playing that a lot, but like there's I don't know if you say that a board game has gameplay, but it has the gameplay that I'm expecting from Scrabble.
Well, it has gameplay.
Yeah, and it has puzzle elements because I'm trying to do what you do in Scrabble.
You're trying
to
outsmart the other person too and gain more points by
There's some amount of game in there.
Yeah,
it's not a grind.
Well, you have to think about what like how you use your letters and you make words out of them, right?
Yeah.
Right. So that's very different dynamic from click this within 6 hours, right?
Exactly. So I'm enjoying that even though it doesn't take up a lot of my time. But I have a lot of fun with it. It's a very casual-ish game. It's something that could be played on Facebook very easily, and I could put status updates like, Alon totally kicked Chris's ass in this game today, right?
Right.
And it, I'm sure, makes plenty of money because it's one of the most popular games on the iPhone.
Yeah.
But I wonder, like, if they would put that, the people who are complaining about these games would put that in a similar category as this grind game, or is the only element they hate just the fact that it has no reward system.
I'm not sure who you're talking about now, but I think that the element that the group I'm talking about hates is that there isn't anything interesting about the gameplay dynamic.
Isn't that subjective, though?
Clearly,
a lot of people think it's interesting.
Well, this is funny, right? I would say, of course it's subjective on one level, but on another level, it's not subjective. And I find it interesting that we don't really have a metric to quantify the depth or the difficulty or the complexity or the sophistication of a collection of gameplay mechanics or systems. We really don't have that. On the other hand, right, it's clear to you and you too, Molly, I'm sure, that the complexity of, for example, like, okay, chess has more intricate and sophisticated gameplay than checkers.
Correct.
Right? I don't think anyone would argue otherwise, right? So
I'm nodding my head yes.
Right. So clearly there's things that are obviously more in-depth, more intense, more whatever you want to call it, of gameplay. There is a sense of more gameplay, and there's a sense of less gameplay, right? So if you take that and apply that to, you know, video games, right, or other games, then it's pretty clear to me, yeah, you know what, if you just have to click on something every once in a while and make sure that, like, all your things that need to be clicked are clicked on a timely fashion, and that's something very different.
I'm trying to figure out what the actual line is, like, where it's drawn that, okay, Farmville is lame. And I think it has to do with there's no person on the planet who couldn't succeed perfectly at that game. It's just a question of time, and the timing is not skill-based. Because any human can click within 6 hours.
It's also certain aspects of playing Farmville, like I said, when you expand your farm and you have more space to grow things, I mean, what you have to do is literally click on each little square to get to harvest your crops. And so you can get a tractor, you can spend all your in-game money on a tractor, and then you run out of gas for it. And then you're like, well, I've got to wait for 3 more days while my tractor refuels. Or I could just pump $10, 10 of my real-world dollars into this waste of space game and further this process. Yeah.
So then the question comes up, well, how is this different than Second Life?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Which has no purpose either.
Well, I propose another metric. I propose, you know, all the games that I find interesting because, most of them anyway, because I can get better at them. If it's an activity where between trials I feel like I'm getting better and I'm learning something new, then that's meaningful gameplay to me. I'm not sure if that happens in Farmville.
Ironically, I'm getting worse while I continue to play Words with Friends.
Well, yeah, you know what? That happens to me too sometimes.
All I ever get are Y's and Q's and...
But that's the fault of the game
cues.
Design.
All right. Well, clearly we're at the end of our program. Thank you for listening, everyone. Make sure to go check out Golgotron.com when you can, and our website is ChatterboxGameshow.com.
Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.